You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. We are teeing up a conversation that we began last week on the news intruding into your table conversation at home. How do kids deal with difficult issues, particularly difficult issues in the news? Say a picture in the news raises some issues. How do you explain it to your kid? We were talking about post-apocalyptic kid literature, but here's what one of you has to say.
This is Marianne Katagan calling from Garber, Oklahoma. And I just wanted to say regarding this apocalyptic issue, it's this kind of a notion that propagates fear over hope. That's a large part of why children want adults out of the picture. They view us as having lost our roles as caregivers who do have real answers.
Thank you, Marianne. She called 877-8-MY-TAKE and left that message. You know, you were talking last week about post-apocalyptic children's literature, but real stories can have just as much of an impact, if not more. Stephen Dubner joins us here in the studio. He's a Takeaway contributor and author of the Freakonomics book and blog. Stephen, thanks for being with you.
Good morning, John.
Adora. Now, there was a picture a couple of weeks ago in the New York Times that related to a story in Zimbabwe that we cover almost every day that intruded into your breakfast table conversation. Why don't you pick up the story there, Stephen?
Yeah, a pretty horrific and memorable photograph of a baby with his legs in casts. And it was related to a story that was on the inside of the paper. So all there was the cut line, the caption on the front page. It said that the baby had been beaten by Mugabe strongmen who had been looking for the baby's father because they wanted to beat him up. He was an opposition leader working for the opposition. They couldn't find the father. They threatened the mother with violence against the baby and indeed beat the baby so badly the legs were broken, had to be in cast.
That's what the story said.
That's what the story said.
You were sitting around the breakfast table.
Early, about this time of day, and I'd read it already, and my kids came in.
It was a startling photograph.
Very striking photograph. I mean, you
can find it on our website, actually. There's a link to it on our website.
You see a baby with leg casts, and you know that something bad has happened. It may be illness. It may be a birth deformity. You don't know what it is. So my kids said, you know, what's with the baby? And so I told them. And I did try to couch it in a little bit of a civics lesson. Like, in our country, you know, you can vote. If you decide you want to vote for Barack Obama, nobody's going to break your legs. John McCain, you can vote for Ron Paul. Nobody's going to break your legs, presumably. And yet, in Zimbabwe, that's not the case. So that was the kind of civics lesson in which I couched it. But the story I told was that some bad guys who represented a really bad guy came in and broke this baby's legs.
That's because your children are 6 and 7.
That's true. If they were 16 and 17, we would have had a totally different discussion. The violence itself wouldn't have been the core of the discussion. But as you know, every parent knows deep down, in some way, your primary objective is to be a guardian, right? A guardian against physical damage to your kids. Of all the things that are so difficult in this society about raising children, the one thing we try to do always is protect the kids, right?
But you also need to tell the truth. And what was your child's reaction, first of all, and then what was your wife's reaction?
They were pretty somber, but I'd say they accepted it, right? So if the first stage in any kind of tragedy is acceptance, or actually maybe that's the second stage, they did, but it shook them up. And it shook them up so much so that later in the day they ratted me out to my wife. And they said that we saw this picture, and Daddy said this, and wowie kazowie. And my wife, in retrospect, I think rightly, came to me later and said, what the heck were you thinking? Especially first thing in the morning, the kids wake up and you tell them a story about a baby, an 11-month-old baby being beaten by these guys. Because immediately a kid's mind can jump to the thought that, hey,
it'll
someone can come through my
right,
door and
right.
beat me.
But so, they saw the picture, so how not address it?
Well, in any case, I mean, that's a great question that Adora asks. And this whole drama sent you off in typical Stephen Dubner fashion to figure out if there was a definitive answer as to what you do in this case. What did you find?
Well, and probably in typical Stephen Dubner fashion, I was unsuccessful in finding a definitive answer. So there's a lot of literature.
Oh, don't be so hard on yourself.
There's a lot of literature on the subject in a variety of different fields, particularly child psychology, as you'd expect. But really, there's no definitive answer. It's a hard question. How do you now? And let me also state this right off the top. This is kind of what you would call a penthouse problem, right? Any family who's having a discussion about how a tragedy secondarily affects their children's lives is not dealing with living within that tragedy itself. So I recognize that, and I don't think we should confuse the issue. Here's the most interesting finding I was able to see. For children who are involved even indirectly, even just as witnesses are reading about tragedies, and there's been a lot of empirical study in this from 9/11, Oklahoma City bombing, on and on. Even indirect exposure can produce a variety of emotional reactions, including post-traumatic stress disorder of a very strong magnitude. And so the idea that you should really shield your children from the brutality of real life does have some significant credence. In terms of how to deal with that, everybody's got different advice.
Yeah, I mean, in my house, Allison, my wife, around the breakfast table, she told our 7-year-old.
Sounds like you and
exactly
I are married
happened.
To the wrong people.
Well, no, I'm married, definitely married to the right person. But her idea is, you know, if you see it, there is an answer, and you can come to mommy and daddy and find out what happened. And if you have further questions about it, we will help you with that. I mean, I don't know what I would have done in this situation because I was stuck in a studio here, but that was her decision. It was very different from your wife.
Absolutely. We talk about, you know, Hitler is, I think, we play 20 questions a lot in the car. I think Hitler is the most common answer to the 20 questions. Everybody in the family loves to use Hitler because there's so many ways to get at him. Now, the kids know quite a bit about Hitler, but we've come
learning
to him
a lot about Stephen today.
We've come to him through the back door of Jesse Owens in the 1936 Olympics. With the Olympics coming up, the kids read a couple Jesse Owens biographies, and you hear about Hitler as this guy who pretty much hated everybody who wasn't like him. Okay, then you can go to the political section. But because we're Jewish, the idea of the Holocaust and Hitler, we haven't done that monster yet. And we've been kind of building up to it, but it's not easy.
And I guess I asked that question about how do you not address it. I was in Nigeria, living in Nigeria in 1984. I was 16 years old, and there was a so-called bloodless coup, but there were a lot of people who ended up dead up in the north where we lived in Nigeria. And so you'd be riding down the street, and they're just sort of cars with bodies in it. And I can't imagine. I mean, it was very upsetting.
Well, there's no way not to tell you about that.
But the point
is, that's for sure.
We had discussions in my household about that, and I think about that now, and had there been no discussion, maybe I had been with my friends and not my parents, and they didn't know that I had seen that, that probably would haunt me still to this day, and that was many decades ago.
The great irony, and we should get to this point, is that the Times picture was actually wrong.
It was wrong. It was a bit of a con job.
It was a con job, and that the baby actually had a congenital deformity, and the casts on the baby's legs were to treat that deformity. So, you know, it comes full circle. I actually told my daughter, my 7-year-old Regan, about that, and her question to me was, how come there's stuff in the newspaper that's not true, Daddy?
Oh boy, press critic.
And I said to her, well, you know, that sometimes that happens. And I said, but the Times told the real story, and now we know it. And she said, how do you know that's the true story, Daddy? Well, so there you go. Anyway, Stephen Dubner, stay with us. We have more. We're actually going to talk with someone who engaged us in that conversation last Friday, who has a very interesting post 9/11 story to tell. We'll be back in a second. Stephen Dubner, stay with us.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.